voeren.
Kom, zie je weg. Hè.
TMZ. TMZ. What is that bomb that you are putting
there? Yeah, we must know this thing.
We must know this thing. You can't just put this thing under the bus.
They must record you.
I think we know each other from the Department of Communication, if I'm not mistaken. And then, honorable members, we are familiar, we are a family now. Let me welcome you once again and say we really thank you for agreeing to come and brief us today on this post, South African Post Bank Limited case. I think it's important that before we adjourn, we understand as the select committee that contents of this bill, so that when we come back, when we work on the bill, then we know, so that even 2 weeks is not, it's nothing. Even when we are home, we'll go through it on our own after getting the background and understanding the reason behind the South African Post Bank Limited bill. So our members, some are still in other meetings, as you know by now, I think you understand how the NCOP works. We are so few, but we are stretched. We go to different committee meetings. Those who will be coming, they'll find us. We won't delay. But I think all of you know me, Priscilla Temba. Got Mr. Groenewald, Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Mlenzana. Other members will be joining us. They're still in other committee meetings. They started this from 8:30, going to different meetings. So we won't be delayed by that. We're going to carry on. Acting DG, over to you.
Good morning, Honorable. Honourable members, you've indicated that the NCOP is a family. I hope we can become part of that family going into the future. It's always a pleasure to present to the NCOP, so thank you very much for the opportunity to be here this morning in a cold, rainy Cape Town. But we enjoy it. My colleagues really enjoy the rain. They do. Yes, I think the post-bank bill, I think, is a groundbreaking bill within the context of South Africa, but I think also within the context internationally. There are very successful post-banks in countries like Japan, Germany, and so on, and my colleagues will take you through the bill in some detail to give you a good sense of why we decided on the bill and its contents. I can also say that the bill was widely consulted in the provinces and with our different constituencies, government departments, labor, private sector, NGOs, communities, and so on. So we're happy that we have a very good product. We have discussed this, in long meetings, marathon meetings in the portfolio committee. I think there was good debates and issues were really, deliberated upon very carefully. We're happy for that, and on the 7th of September, the Portfolio Committee voted on it, and on the 14th September, it was yesterday, the bill was passed by the National Assembly, so we now en route to Cabinet via the NCOP, so we hope that We can also engage the NCOP around the bill and to ultimately get an institution established that will add great value to the lives of our poorer segment in South Africa. And I think that is the reason for the bill. So I will ask Willie Woleka to take you through part of the bill. Norman Nsuleri, the acting DDG, will in for the policy branch, will then make his contribution. And then Alf Woods will also contribute towards the end. And we also want to introduce to you Dimakatso Mojela, there right on the end, and also as part of our team. So I would like to hand over to Uli, please. Norman first, sorry.
Before you do that, Norman, let me welcome the members who have just joined us. As I indicated that they were in other meetings, and we've got Honorable Sibande is representing Mpumalanga as a member of this committee. Then we've got Honorable Lebohang Mabija, she is representing Mpumalanga and Limpopo, and then nation and as a member of this committee. Thank you.
You're welcome.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'll be presenting the first part of the presentation, as Dr. Russell has indicated, and my colleagues, Mr. Willy Vukela, will take you through the second part in terms of the defining details of the process which are in the bill. Then followed by Mr. Alf Woods, who will do the other sections of the bill in detail. I just want to start by saying that, giving a background to say Postbank all over the world has been part of the post offices. In South Africa, for many years, always been part of that. And I think the main aim of this, why it's part of the post office, is just to give people who are in the mostly isolated and rural communities access to financial services at the time. And I think we still believe that it still remains a viable option to be able to ensure that people have got access to financial services. And I think in our case, SAPO for many years has been offering such services, which included money order, money order, issues, and postal order services that the post office used to do. The Post Bank, which is a division of SAPO, has been established in terms of the Post Office Act of 1958, Act Number 44 of 1958. Under the control and management of SAPO as a division. I think my colleagues will indicate to you that why there's a need for us to incorporate and have a separate company which will deal with the financial services in that regard. Currently, it's regulated under the Postal Services Act 124 of 1998, and it has a special exemption from the application of the Banks Act, which imposes high entry barriers in terms of capital, liquidity, and reserves requirements. You will know that if you want to operate a bank, you should have a certain amount in your balance sheet, a certain amount of money in terms of assets, and so on. So the Postal Services Act then exempted this post bank from the stringent requirements which are required by the Register of Banks in terms of registering a bank, as it were. And I think my colleagues will further expand on this point in terms of what is the proposal going forward, which is in the bill. And also, this will have impeded government intentions to provide financial services to the rural and the unbanked population of the post office infrastructure. Can we move to the next one? Currently, it operates as a deposit-taking and Saving Division of the South African Post Office. It only takes deposits and savings, as it were. So it can't do any other thing except those two critical things. And it uses the infrastructure of the post office. You know, if you want to put money, you go to a post office, that's where you put the money. And I think that is what you're going to be carrying forward in terms of operationalizing this bank because of the wide network infrastructure that the post office has to be able to reach those areas, even in the deep rural areas, for people to have access to such. Where does this thinking come from? The white paper on postal policy of 1996 provided a framework for the structuring of the post bank and the cooperation of the post bank as subsidiary of the whole owned SAPO. What we are doing in terms of this bill is to implement those provisions of 1996. You may be asking why now? Why not then? But I think we should take into account the fact that there is a process that has been indicated in that white paper. So we are quite happy that we at this point in time were able to, after so many years of deliberations in terms of this, come with this post bank bill. In 2005, there was an MOU which was signed, which was entered into between the Minister of Finance and the late Minister of Communications, which then gives further impetus for us as a department to corporatize the post bank going forward. The policy and the MOU spelled out the governing principles and the process to be followed in the restructuring of the corporation of the post bank, as it were. As a way of getting the work off ground, a working and steering committee were established, which comprised of the DOC, South African Post Office, National Treasury, the Post Bank, and the Reserve Bank, to be able to work on the final details in terms of how this bank should look like. And the DOC's mandate in that task team was to develop a legislative framework within which a company can be established to deal with the financial services. So what I'm trying to say is that the bill that we presented here is a product of National Treasury, DOC, and Reserve Bank, and the Post Office. And then the National Treasury and SAPO and Reserve Bank are also, on the other hand, working on other prudential requirements to ensure the proper implementation of the process, which included conducting due diligence of the state readiness and the work on the gaps to be identified. They'll be doing those kind of those other things. Strategic focus of the bill. The bill aims to create a legislative framework that will facilitate the incorporation of the Post Bank division of the Post Office as a public company into a wholly owned by the Post Office, and for the company to be registered and operate as a bank. Provide for the establishment of a financial institution for mass mobilization of savings and investment from a broad community, particularly to communities that have little or no access to commercial banking services and facilities, as it were strategy for the bill. And lastly, to provide an improved and expanded role of the public of the post bank and to strengthen the post bank to provide financial services to wide segments, particularly rural communities. So I've given you that broad overview, and I'll hand over now to my colleague, Mr. Willie Vukela, to take you through the process of the bill. Thank you. Hand over to Mr. Vukela.
Thanks, HNDG. My job will be to present what is in front of you, close by close. My DDG presented the high-level aims and objectives and government vision from 1998 until to date. Why do we need this bill, as the Honorable Chair has raised, and why now? So the number of developments made since then, process outlined by the white paper until to date, I think we can engage in that to that, members. The summary of the bill is divided into six chapters in front of you. Chapter one is purely interpretation and objects of the Act. Chapter 2, I'll talk about incorporation and transfer of enterprise from the old to the new company. Chapter 3, the ownership, who owned this company, and the powers that affect. Chapter 4, talk about the control, who controls the company, and therefore management of it. And Chapter 5, what qualifies the funds of the company, financial accounts, and then the last one, general miscellaneous. Interpretation of the bill, definitions, we provided some definitions in the bill that are used in the body of the bill. The intention is to provide facilities of weight as they will be used in the for better understanding and expression of the bill itself. I'm not going to read each definition as stands. I guess there might be questions arising from honorable members that can be attended to. Clause 2, it talks about the objects of the bill. What does this seek to achieve for the company? The object of this act is to provide for the incorporation of the post bank division of the post office as a legal person. Currently, with the division, as the DG said, within post office, that all of us know, you go to post office, you save your money. You remember those who are old enough, you go to post office, you request a 50 rand, you are told Bloemfontein is offline, come after 2 weeks. So everything was Bloemfontein. So we realized that, yes, indeed, how can you modernize that whole process? So this trying to incorporate that process. Now, there are a number of objects outlined. One is to conduct a business or bank that will encourage and attract savings among people of the Republic, to render transitional services and lending facilities through, amongst others, a footprint which post office has as a massive infrastructure across the country. The third object is to expand the range of banking services and develop into a bank of first choice for our people, in particular to rural and lower income markets, as well as communities that have little or no access to commercial bank service. Currently, our people cannot go and open bank accounts because of stringent requirements. That's point number one. Point number two, because they are not encouraged, the access of those facilities are not conducive for them. Hence, this bank for them could serve as a bank of first choice. We will encourage your stock firms, we'll encourage students, everybody to have that bank account, part of the economic ministry of the country. Then it further promotes universal and affordable access to banking services and ensure lending to rural and lower income markets, and ensure that the rates and charges of the company take into account whether the needs of people in the lower income market. That is quite important. On clause 3 is about incorporation from the division to a subsidiary of the post office. This clause provides for the incorporation of the public company and for such company to be wholly owned by the Southern Post Office as a holding company. And it further empowers the Minister of Communications to sign memorandum and article of association and all other documents necessary for the formation and approval of the bill. Minister acts as an oversight person or executive in this bill. Clause 4, it talks about registration as a company. To induct members and colleagues, if you want to open or operate as a bank, there are three processes outlined by the Banks Act. One, you must apply to be authorized to open a company or to have the company. That company might not be a bank. You first apply to set the registrar. I want to establish a company. When that company is being authorized, secondly, you apply to register as a bank. And thirdly, you apply to have a banking license. So because in a situation, this company is a government bank that is already established, we cannot apply to be authorized to establish a bank. We can start from state number 2, where in terms of this provision compels the company to register as a bank after they satisfy the requirements of the bank. The reason being, we cannot give this company a license tomorrow. It must go through banking requirements to test the risk involved are our money going to be safe? Let this company go all banking requirements. So we might deem it being, let us say, tomorrow, post-banking lessons with all the risk, and then the following day it collapses and government actually bail it out. So we are putting a conditions that are able to mitigate that risk. The company shall not expand the scope of its banking investment activity, which exists when this act has effects, until it's registered as a bank in terms of Banks Act. This is another requirement. And any such additional request is approved by the Register of Bank. You will see in the bill that the role of Register of Bank, that the role of Minister of Treasury, of Finance, there's a role of Minister of Communications. So there are a number of oversights involved in this company, not necessarily Minister of Communications. Clause 5, it provides determination of extent of business to be transferred. This clause empowers the post office to determine the extent of the business to be transferred to the new company, and for such business to be audited by public accounts and auditor appointed by the minister. And it further provides for the said auditor to attach monetary value in determining the extent of the business of the former post bank. Clause 6, determination of transfer date of enterprise. This clause empowers the minister to determine a date for the transfer of the enterprise from the former post bank to the company by notice in the Government Gazette, to be transparent and open for public to see. The transfer of enterprise of former post bank to company vesting and consequences. It provides that on the transfer date, the management, control, and operation of the former post bank are transferred to the new company. The business of former post bank vests in the company, subject to compliance with the Labor Relations Act. Personnel of the former post bank is transferred to the company. So then there is a role of labor organizing in that environment. And the labor laws take precedence in terms of transferring employees. Employer might choose to go to a new company, but there will be fit and proper processes, because it's a company, it's a bank, you must have requirements of a FICA requirements. Banking employee are different from any other employees because of the stringent conditions that are outlined in the Banks Act and in the FICA requirements to be fit and proper to handle money. And anything done by or on behalf of the former post bank must be regarded as having been done by the company. Exemption from tax liability. This provision provides for the exemption of the transfer of the business of former post bank from tax liability. Clause 9, powers and duties of the company. It provides for the powers that the company shall have to enable it to realize its objectives as set out in Section 2. Remember, we talk about objects, the vision in Section 2 that this company needs to achieve. So this provision assists the company in terms of the process in achieving such vision. Importantly, the company will have power to invest money, that's quite important, to borrow money, and to lend, in accordance with the investment policy made by the minister with the country Minister of Communication and Finance. So they won't wake up in the morning and go and invest money somewhere in Switzerland, wake up and borrow money from somewhere, and the state becomes, they become liable for the state and bail them out. So before they can engage in all these three major activities, Minister of Communications and the Minister of Finance must approve. It further provides for an agreement between the Home Post Office and the Post Bank to utilize the SAPO footprint of infrastructure. The good part about our Post Office is a public company. You might travel as far as deep rural, and these houses are well away because members come from provinces. You are aware of how your province looks like. The good part of it, you might find that in that remote villages, there might not be any economic activities, but there will be one building called post office. It might not be used, but that building is there. So now we need to begin to mark around the potential of using it as a bank to draw our communities for banking activities. That's a good part of it. Clause 10, control and management of the company. This clause provides that the company is controlled by the board of directors. Currently, they don't have board of directors because there is a division within the South African Post Office. The South African Post Office are the ones who oversee the activities and operations of the company. Now, for a governance model to begin to give this company a governance status in terms of that standing, they will have to have their own board and their own executive. The clause further empowers the minister, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance and the Post Office, to appoint or reappoint board members. Clause 11, functions of the board. This clause provides for the functions of the board as follows. One, must give effect to corporate plan of the company. I think you're aware that Post Office Schedule 2 in terms of PFMA, they need to take the advantage of corporate plans. The board is the accounting authority of the company, and they provide guidance to the managing director and the personnel of the company concerning the exercise of the functions of the company. The board must further notify the minister immediately of any measure that may prevent or materially affect the achievement of the object of financial targets of the company. As far as clause 12 is concerned, it's about composition of the board. This clause provides for the composition of the board and the qualification of its members. And it further provides for the composition of the board as follows. We have 7 non-executive members appointed from among the persons nominated in terms of section 14.1A. Now, we created a governance model in the bill. This model is might be quite new in most of our SOE. We have realized that because it's a public company, we need involvement. This came from our public hearings because we widely consulted the DGC in all 9 provinces. Members who come from Mpumalanga, in Mpumalanga we were at the last village of South Africa. We were in Padang village here in Mozambique, around Bangwan. I'm not sure if members know where Bangwan is. So, yeah. This shows how far we have gone trying to get views. When you're in that village, you can hear somebody coughing from Swaziland and Mozambique. So we got, people are saying, we see state-owned entities. We see public companies. We hear in the morning there's a board member appointed. What is our role as people, as clients, as owners? And there is a provision that put a committee that will draw nominations from members to sit in the board. B, there are 2 other non-executive members appointed from amongst persons nominated by the Post Office in terms of section 14.1B. As a holding company, they recommend 2 individuals who will sit as board members of the company. And the MD, who is an executive member of the board, by virtue of his office, he becomes a board member. Clause 13, disclosure and disqualification from membership of board. This clause provides the ground of disqualification from membership of the board, and the most important is that no person may be appointed as a board member if he shares any direct or indirect interest in conflict with the business of the company. This clause was quite debated in the process until to date where we are now. There will be no conflict of interest allowed in this company. People are saying if you declare it's not enough. Don't even sit in the board if you know that there will be interest in the company. This is what people are saying. So they're saying to declare is one admin tool, admin mechanism. I declare, but I've got interest, that I'm conflicted. I can excuse myself, go and sit outside. When I discuss my wife's tender in the board, so I can just go and sit outside when this comes back. So the way I say, there will be no interest. It further provides financial interest disclosure and declaration that a member has no interest that are in conflict with the business of the company. And the further differentiate between disclosure before and after appointment. Clause 14 talks about appointment of members of board. This clause employs the method of appointment to the board and further outlines the process to be followed to that effect. In summary, the minister must 60 days after consensus has been reached with the Minister of Finance and the Southern Post Office regarding the appointment of members as in Section 10(2)(i), designate the non-aggrieved members of the board from suitable persons permitted by the Post Office and appoint the other non-existent members of the board to a person appointed by the nomination committee. As I've indicated before, that will be a committee that's going to screen nomination processes and issue invite in terms of calling people to sit in the company board. Resignation, removal from office, and vacation of office. This clause provides for how resignations and removal and vacation from office of the board members shall be dealt with by the minister in that processes. Clause 16, disclosure of fiduciary duties of board members. This clause provides for a member of the board to not be present or take part in the decision of or the taking of decision of any matter before the board in which that member or his or a family member, business partner, or asset has a direct or indirect interest. That's all that said. It further provides for a member of the board or his or his family member, business partner, or associate, or an organization or enterprise in which a member of the board or his or his family member, business partner, associate has a direct or indirect interest, not to offer goods or services to the company or conclude any business with the company. So this is what people say, that even if I'm working for a certain company, as soon as my employer begins to have interest with the Post Bank, I am totally disqualified to sit in that board because I've got indirect interest. It further provides for the other future duties such as the regular attendance of board meetings and the performance of functions with the utmost good faith, honesty, and integrity, care, and diligence. That matter, provide for procedure at meetings and call the board to appoint committee necessary to assist in the realization of the company objectives and delegate any of its powers to such committees. These are governed in terms of the company law. Appointment of managing director. Clause 18 provides power and provision for the board to appoint the MD as the most senior person of the company, subject to the minister approval, and outline the process of appointment to that effect. Clause 19, condition of appointment of managing director. It outlines the condition for the appointment of MD and the remuneration package as determined by the board with the concurrence of the minister and the Minister of Finance. So the MD cannot just at the end of financial year give himself or herself a bonus and increase. So that two ministers involved, that must agree. The appointment of the MD is subject to the contract of performance and contract entered into between the board and the MD. And the MD is accountable to the board. Clause 20, personnel of the company. It makes provision for the managing director with the concurrence of the board to appoint personnel to perform work-related functions. Further provides that the board must determine the structure of the company and the condition of service remuneration, service benefit personnel in consultation with the minister and the Minister of Finance. You can see that there are a lot of mitigation involved in terms of providing some risk, because you find this company, MD of the board, increasing the structure and more the company is in the rage because the money goes to the personnel, to personal. So here we're saying, before the company can create the one leg in the structure, you must justify that. And the Minister of Communications, and the Minister of Finance must agree that, yes, we need an assistant MD. We don't want to wake up in the morning and hear that the board has appointed assistant MD. So these are the requirements put in place to mitigate in that regard. I'll pause there and over to my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The next clause in the bill is clause 21, which deals with the annual report of the Post Bank. It provides for the company to annually, not later than 5 months after the end of its financial year, submit to the Minister a report on all its activities during the previous year. You'll note that that is very similar to the PFMA requirement. In fact, it's exactly the PFMA requirement. The next bullet, it further provides for the annual report to be tabled in Parliament within 30 days after it was received by the Minister. Clause 22 is the clause that deals with the funds of the company, and it reads that the funds of the company consists of A, capital vested in the company by virtue of Section 7, which is the funds transferred from the current Post Bank, B, funds derived from its operating activities, C, money appropriated by Parliament, and D, money lawfully received from any other source. Clause 23 is about the inspection of financial accounts and documents by the Minister, and really empowers the Minister to inspect and request information from the Post Bank. Clause 24 just ensures that the Public Finance Management Act is applicable to the Post Bank. Clause 25 is the clause that deals with intervention by the Minister. Nowadays, such an intervention clause seems to be an important provision to have in law. Clause 25 firstly says that the Minister may direct the company, which is the Post Bank, to take any action specified by the Minister if the company is being mismanaged or fails to perform its functions effectively, has acted unfairly or in a discriminatory or inequitable way, or failed to comply with any law. So firstly, the Minister can direct them in those circumstances. If they then fail to remedy the situation within a certain period, the Minister actually has the authority to replace members of the board or at some point the whole board. Alternatively, the Minister can appoint an administrator to take over the relevant functions of the company. Clause 26 is about the regulatory and policy-making power of the Minister, enabling the Minister to develop regulations after consultation with the Minister of Finance, and also to make policy on matters of national interest applicable to the company. You've heard my colleagues speak to the issue of borrowing, lending, and those policies that will be of critical importance. So those policies must go through a stringent process. The Minister must act with the concurrence, not mere consultation. It's concurrence required from the Minister of Finance, then Cabinet approval, and then the policy must be tabled in the National Assembly before being gazetted. So it's quite a comprehensive process. Clause 27 then deals with the Companies Act and to what extent it's applicable. It provides that the provision of the Companies Act does not apply to the Post Bank if A, because of any special or contrary arrangement made by this Act, such a provision is inapplicable, or B, the Minister of Trade and Industry specifically says no, that section is not applicable to the Post Bank. Clause 28 then creates the whole procedure and mechanism by which the Minister of Trade and Industry can declare certain provisions of the Companies Act to be inapplicable. It empowers the Minister to request the Minister of Trade and Industry to declare any provision of the Companies Act to be inapplicable to the company and describes the process involved, which includes public participation. The Minister of Trade and Industry can only make it inapplicable under certain circumstances, after ensuring that no third party would suffer any prejudice. Clause 29 is the offences clause. Most importantly, it is linked to the fiduciary duties of the members of the board. So, for instance, attendance of meetings and the exercise of their duties with the required due diligence. The fact that members of the board must declare their financial interest, the fact that they have to, as my colleague alluded to, declare whether they have any interest that may be in conflict with the business of the company. So we've created corresponding offences in the offences clause for transgression of fiduciary duties and so forth. The next clause is clause 30, which is a transitional provision. Bearing in mind that you have a current form of a post bank within the post office, and this bill will commence a process whereby you will firstly establish a company and eventually it will be registered as a bank. Now, during this period, up to registration as a bank, you need to cater for it because the current provisions in the Postal Services Act that enable the current post bank will be repealed. So you need transitional provisions to ensure that it's protected and it can continue its current activities until such time as the post bank is then registered as a bank under the Banks Act. Clause 31 is the clause that then provides for the repeal of certain sections of the Postal Services Act, if you read it with Schedule 1. So those sections 51, 52, up to 58 currently deal with the limited version of the post bank within the post office, and due to the promulgation of this bill, those sections will not be required any longer. And lastly, the short title is provided in clause 32 of the bill. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you, colleagues, for the comprehensive overview. A lot of hard work has gone into this bill to ensure that we have all the checks and balances in place. Because, you know, we're going to work with the money of poor people in the first place. Of course, the bank is open for everyone. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that we will make sure, we would like to make sure that the masses, the many people out there that are currently not in the banking environment, they come into the fold, because it will also, I think, encourage a culture of saving, you know. And there is a problem in our communities, in the country, not only the poor, but everyone is just not saving. And I think the post bank will encourage that to a large extent. So, and that is why we need to have this, you know, very serious constraints in terms of what people can do, and also the employees of the bank and the board. So, Honourable Chairperson, that is from our side. Thank you.
And the Acting DG, thank you very much. And thanks to the members of your delegation. We thank the information, and I understand that you said you went countrywide for public hearings. I think members would like to know that they speak for themselves. Would like to know whether you only Bangwan, you mentioned Bangwan, but we would like to know other areas. This is Section 75, members. Though it's going to be implemented in provinces. Mm. So I'm going to give this opportunity to you now, members, Honourable Honourable Lenzana.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. For a start, I want to congratulate the delegation. I think that it's a good document. And really, there's a lot of people who will get a benefit out of it at the end of the day. So I've got only at this stage one question, and that is the kind of structures you're going to use for the post bank. What do you have in mind? Will it be a type of mobile vehicles, or is it a more permanent structure you're going to use for this, especially in the rural areas? Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairman. Let me also join Honourable for applauding this good work done. And also, Chairperson, when a particular department does something good, I think it's our responsibility to give them, you know, some kind of accolation. We are not always here to raise only the negative aspect of things. I'm raising this, Chairperson, because correctly, as you are saying, this is a Section 75B. If the Department of Communication wanted to be arrogant, they would just go straight to cabinet, then implementation without ourselves, particularly that we're told, and I also understand that the National Assembly has already voted on the bill. So thanks, Acting DG, for recognizing us that we are. Okay.
Don't say that.
Okay.
Withdraw what you've just said. They're not recognizing us. They must.
Okay.
This must come to the NCO too, definitely. Without us, this bill won't be passed.
Okay.
Okay. Withdrawn. So, person, noting that this is a government bank, one would like to have some understanding here on the determination of your interest rates and other things. I'm looking mainly at those poor rural people thinking aloud that there would be some kind of a change, that at least if I have managed to do some savings, putting my money in the bank, at least I expect that if I put 2 rands now, I would get something more than 2 rands come December. There's a determination of that. Who does that? I've heard you mentioning some role of the Reserve Bank. The other one is the effectiveness of government control. There's a chapter here where one of the chapters I made a note. I think it is this control, clause 9, bullet 3 on page or slide 25, where you put in the centrality. One would assume that when you say minister, it doesn't mean minister as a person, it means the department. That bullet 2. I think for me, it will go a long way where we would avoid a situation where there are always bailouts, by the state, where you let things run loose and then down the line we have to come in. There are 2 terms, Honorable Chairperson, intervention and interference. One would like to know, how does this go? Remember, in my preamble, I said, subject to correction, this is a government bank. Then lastly, Chairperson, the centrality of power. I don't get the mention of parliament or the portfolio committee, particularly, Chairperson, in the appointment, reappointment of the board members. Yes, one would agree when it goes to the managing director down. But what about this on board members? Would Parliament be informed when things have gone haywire? I understand, I'm raising this question, that I understand that currently there's litigation in the department around these issues of, you know, human relations. Now, Parliament would then be brought in when things are already, the beans have been spilled already. Thanks, Chairperson.
Sanbonani. Mainly, I'd like to join or to echo my sentiments to thank this for this information, but nevertheless, maybe to ask some to comment and also to ask some few clarities. You see, as your input, there is a quite difference between a practical and theoretical. If it can be practical, I think that this can be very, very good. But I'm scared of one thing, because I wanted to clarify about this thing of transferring from post office to the company. In this sense, at the present moment, practical example, most of some of the government entities have transferred money of the old age pensioners to post office. That's a serious crisis. They don't have capacity in some of the post office. To an extent, they are unable to have the projection that how many people must we pay. Because what is happening, I was practically involved to make some follow-up on some of this post office. They will tell you that, no, the queue is too long. Money is finished. How can the money be finished while you're supposed to? And people have been queuing for a long time because of poverty. People are even sleeping, whatever, in the post office while there's no money. Sometimes they're being told that systems are down. And they don't have plan B. If plan A failed, it means that plan B. They must have plan B. So if never can have a clarity so that I can satisfy myself in order to that thing of capacity, because the current system doesn't work at all. And again, maybe if you can give me a clarity on the composition of the board. I know enough when we were coaching Bangwan and Yondindini, who's in a very, of course, those are far. But it mustn't be a token, it must be a reality. In that regard, maybe if you can clarify us exactly the total number of the board members, because you spoke about 7 non-executive members and also 2 in terms of section 14.1A. And then also in terms of 14.1B, you spoke about 2 other non-executive members which are going to be nominated or appointed from the. Maybe you can clarify that. Because my concern is one, what type of the people are going to be utilized there? Because from your own input is that the manager director, who is an executive member of the board, I believe that the executive, if it's a manager director, it means that the person must be full-time. Maybe if you can clarify us on those in that regard. Because some of the board, sometimes people are not working, they are only come once as board members. But in this regard, if you can clarify us, how many people will be there, and how many people will be working full-time, and how many people will be there for part-time, attending the only board meetings. And again, maybe if you can, not deep, if you can hint, highlight some of the powers of the board members, why I'm raising that. In your own input, you indicated that 2 ministers which are going to approve it. It means that it's not clear that what will be the powers of the board and what the role of the ministers in that regard. Or the role of the ministers, it goes as far as appointing only the board members and disappear. What will be the status quo as the time goes on? I'll pause there because I've got a lot of questions at the moment, but I'll pause there.
Yes, thank you very much. I think in your opening remarks, Mr. Besson, when you speak of consultation, if you can clarify that, You see, we've got a right also as the NCOP to have public hearings. But next time when you do these things, you must remember us. When you go to provinces to do like public hearings in provinces, remember that there is the NCOP that works directly with provinces. Because even if it's Section 75, you saw the need of going to provinces and mostly to the rural areas, of which I really appreciate, and I want to congratulate you for that. If you can clarify, you went to Mbangwani, but Mbangwani is not the only rural area of the province. How is the information going to go to this other part of, like you made an example of Mpumalanga, how this information is going to go to other parts of the rural areas in Mpumalanga, in Sekhukhune, in Limpopo, or wherever, in Venda, in Limpopo, in Free State, in Northwest, going to Maraptan, going to, how are the people going to be informed? Though you have done these public hearings, I'm sure it's information didn't go well enough to the people. For example, when we go to our constituencies, when we visit this pay point, I think this is a very good bill that is going to assist, especially the elderly, whom when they go to this, they don't know where to put their money. And these people come to the pay point and they take their money from there, you know, you see. So I think this is a very good bill, like my colleague Sibande is saying, if it's going to be implemented and not be eight of show. You know, and if you can also tell us, in provinces, who did you work with when you do public hearings? Who did you work with? And the stakeholders that were involved also. I mean, the stakeholders. The department, I think if I'm not mistaken, you spoke of the department also. We want to get the understanding of which department, so that even if there's no department of communication in provinces, a provincial department, but we know from here, if I want to give more information as a member of this committee to the people, who do I work with in the province? Thanks. Let me welcome Honorable Jacobs. Like I said, members will be coming in one by one as they are attending other meetings. You are welcome, Honorable Jacobs. We are dealing with the South African Post Bank Limited bill. We have already received the presentation, and it's our first meeting on this bill. We're still going to go. You know, we just want to be and get the background of this bill. Over to you, Mr. Besson's team.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think a number of very, very important issues have been raised by the Honorable Members and yourself. And yes, and just to start with your comments, I think the consultation situation, and there is a serious problem, you know, as far as government departments are concerned. We don't communicate properly. We don't reach out to all our people. So many of our people are there, they not aware of the nice things happening that they can use for improving their own qualities of life. So that is a very, very important thing, and I think in the department, my colleagues and I are very sensitive to this whole issue of consultation and reaching out and making sure that our people know what's happening. But I'm going to ask my colleagues to respond to the questions or the issues, and I will later on, if there are gaps, I will deal with it. So I would like to ask Willy to deal with the consultation issue and also the structures of the proposed bank, whether it's mobile, physical, and so on. Then I will ask Norman to deal with the interest rates issue. I think that is also very important. If we talk about, you know, the rural poor and the bank of the poor, then interest rates are very important. Then there was an issue raised around the effectiveness of a government bank, control, bailouts. Now we unfortunately have a history of this kind of thing, you know. People say, oh, you know, the land bank, there's another bank. So it's because of the negative things that happen that we have all these checks and balances now built into it. I just don't want to be the MD or the chairperson of the bank. The fourth one, if you can deal with the effectiveness of the bank and government. Then, Willy, I would like you to respond to the centrality of power that was raised. For example, the appointment of people, the minister, all of the ministers, and so on, Willy. And then, Norman, if you can deal with the very important issues around practice and theory, the practical implementation of this, the theory, the capacity, the powers of the ministers, the people on the board, numbers, and so on. So if we can start with you, Willy.
Thanks, Acting DG. Thanks, Honorable Chair. Okay, thanks. I'll start by addressing the question raised by Honorable Member and the Chairperson on consultation. Where are you consultant? Who were the stakeholders involved? That's a very proper question. And as Action DG said at the beginning, that this bill was widely consulted, with no doubt. One, we've covered all nine provinces. All nine provinces. With full participation of members. What we did initially was to draw a database from the postbank, taking to where are these postbank clients? Because I cannot just go and consult anybody who does not know this animal called postbank. And then after drawing database from that, there are clients out there, but we look areas where they are saturated. Mangwana was one of them, and I am happy to say we received a very good response in Mpumalanga. In fact, we end up consulting more than once in Mpumalanga because of the faith people have. One, we were called by Mpumalanga. I'm not sure what the name of that structure, but it's working with the MEC of local government just to go and brief cadres first in a very close meeting, councillors, politicians in that area of Mpumalanga. We went and briefed them before we can conduct our public hearings. Now, what makes us easy, they then do the work on our behalf. When we went back on the date fixed for the hearings, I can tell you, colleagues, we nearly changed the venue because we had more than 2,000 people. It was magnificent. We helped by the police to control the crowds because we want to know this. We want this bank. That was one area. Second area, we went to Mafikeng. Mafikeng also we went more than once because the half of traditional leaders, they wrote the minister. The minister, we saw an advert in the media talking about the drafting of post-bank legislation. We want to understand this thing. So, you see now, members were themselves protected. Before us going there, they already asked the minister, said, Minister, come and present. We went to Mafikeng to meet how the traditional leaders presented, and went there again on a fixed date. That was weekend, Saturday. So, we were working even weekend. But Saturday, we got a very good response. I don't get paid overtime.
Work overtime.
Yeah. So Cape Town went Google too. We didn't go to your normal city. Cape Town went Google too. Very good response. A contribution made. Eastern Cape went to PE, and the same Eastern Cape with support of African leaders. Even the, I think the it's one of the chief, I left the chair of what, President Leader's house. They were there in the meeting. They raised the question of the structure, the question that the member is raising. It came from Eastern Cape. The format of this structure, there's going to be a mobile bank, a type of a bank, but will respond on the structural issue. Limpopo were in Polokwane. We're trying to blend the rural and the mixture of towns and townships around. Covered by Sishiu, we also consulted with students of universities in other provinces where universities would send students to come and participate. Limpopo was one of them. University was quite cooperative. University of Limpopo, Bloemfontein, Free State, were in Bloemfontein with a student of University of Free State, who released students to come and participate. The other province. Kimberley, Northern Cape, we're in Kimberley, good support, where we got support, the state of COSATU and the coup, precisely for Kimberley, because it was our first consultation in Kimberley, where the adverts were issued a week before, but with the help of CWU and COSATU, we were able to do our work properly. KZN, we went with rural village, I've forgotten the name, the name of KZN, person Richard Bay driving down there, what is it? Somewhere driving to Pongola, I forgot the name of the rural village, but we had a very good response even in that. Because the database was indicating to us to say there are people that are using this bank in this segment of the outer area. Now, we also covered through our community radio stations. All of them. And we had interviews, the talk shows in radio station, community radio station, whereby people are calling in to understand this type of a bank, to show the magnificence and the impact that we made. Chair, you raised the question, who helped you? Of course, we were done with the truth, the center of the CW. They play an important role. That trust that government established, if it's precisely used for a stand of GCIS, on the media part of it, GCIS was us in all the provinces trying to assist because there were footprints in all the provinces. DOCF, Chairperson, we said, don't have competency or offices in those areas, but GCIS helped us through a stand of CWU. Government departments, okay, government have got trust system that is working that aware of members. We consulted with all economic cluster departments, your finance department, your science and technology, HDI, economic development, all of them. We had a workshop to the Director General's officials, and the bill also went through all cabinet structures, your committee on economic cluster, cabinet committees, until cabinet sometimes last year, October. Again, we have used the local newspapers, local newspapers that we have used to sensitize members on this process. So as the DG said, this process was so widely consulted, and indeed, people were saying, you are the only department that we can ever feel. Some will say, we never hear that there's department, others, but at least you thought about us, we are here today, this shows that government is working. And we owe them a report back, Chairperson. Many were saying, as soon as the bill gets passed, we want to know whether you were here for talk show, but as you are saying. So we owe these people, all of them, report back. We'll find strategy. How do we engage with them going forward? That was consultation. Now, the next question, Chair, was about the structure, whether mobile or what. Because of the risk factor involved, and because that financial sector is a highly regularized sector by the Reserve Bank. The conditions requirements set. So we might wish to have mobile bank, but it's not possible because of the risk involved out there. Hence, we're saying the role that the register would play here is quite magnificent. Though as a government bank, we might set to register the less requirements, but it feels not proper because money that is put there should be saved. And secondly, the question raised on the structure, on the transfer from this old post bank to a new post bank. One, post bank does have money. This bank got a lot of money. One other thing that perhaps DG could not talk about it was that the pressure that government is having to have this bank, when the new government came into being in 1994, when we dissolved the called TBVC states, all of them then had their post banks. Now, we centralized that money into central office. Now, our post office went and used that money. When the treasury bailed out post bank, couldn't give money to post office, they created a fund sitting somewhere in the reserve bank to say, we cannot give you this money until post bank is a legal person and what is on board. So you can see these are other measures are put in place to secure the booster funds to respond to the question raised. That, of course, if currently we leave as it is, post office can grant a law but use the booster funds. And that then goes collapse and the government bail it out. But it's for us to protect the interest of customers on that regard. So on the transfer, yes, indeed, employees will choose to move to a post bank, but the fit and proper because the FICA requirement is a bank, it's no longer a postal outlet. That will happen through the Banks Act requirements. So, XNDG, the last question about central power, the role of ministers after appointing the board.
Yes, at the moment it's going to be
okay. Thanks, DG.
Mm-hmm. We deal with that, with the interest rates and the control.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I'll start by giving a bit of a context to the question of interest rates. Members will be aware that will be aware how interest rates are set in South Africa. In the sense that the Reserve Bank governor will decide on what you call a repo rate. This is the rate at which the Reserve Bank will borrow banks' money. And then you do have the prime rate, which is the rate at which the banks borrow out the money. And you find that very often, you find that the repo rate is always the prime rate always the repo rate plus some margin of about 4% all the time. Meaning that they are in any case not able to pass those benefits to the consumers. Depending on your risk profile, they can decide to give you prime minus or prime plus. And I think in this instance, many of our people that the bank will be able to service are those people who may not necessarily have any asset to use as a collateral, you know, in that way. Hence, I think in the bill, we have built specifically under the object clause 2, to say that one of the things that must do is must aim to ensure that the rates and charges of the company take into consideration the needs of the people in the lower income market. This objective needs to be read in line with the three things that needs to be done in regard to the investment policy, in regard to the borrowing policy, and the lending policy that the minister, in concurrence with the Minister of Finance, needs to develop. So we have put these measures as a way of ensuring that the benefits as they accrue, the people, when they put their money there, they must not be charged interest rates which are above the normal which is being charged. You also know that there has been discussions with regard to the whole question about the bank charges. The Competition Commission has done the work, there was a commission, and so on and so on. We have taken into account the work that was done by that to say, if you've got banks today, who would want to continue in that light of saying that it's always a higher margins that they need to get, you know, in that way. These banks that we're creating should be able to ensure that people get the benefits, not necessarily in the same of saying that it's a repo rate plus 4%. The Minister of Communication and Minister of Finance will then determine the rate. That's what I'm going So you don't necessarily be dependent on the Reserve Bank to put such an interest rate in that way. So there will be that kind of intervention from the part of government to make sure that the benefits pass into the people. Because we're dealing with people who can't even have a house, for example. They're in the rural areas, they can't use the house as a collateral to build anything, you know, in that regard. So I think that's the safeguard, the check and balance that the King G spoke about when you're building into this bill. There was a question on the theory and practice that the Acting DG said I must also talk to. Obviously, of course, we are mindful of the fact that very often when you have got a policy or a law, sometimes, you know, if you don't put the necessary mechanisms and checks and balances, you tend to have an outcome which is unintended, as it were. And I think in this bill, I think we have tried by all means to think through some of the challenges that may exist. You will know that I think the issue about long queues, I think my colleague, Mr. Vukela, spoke about, you go to the bank, you find there's not even money, the system is down, and so on. This will require that the Post Bank, you know, invest heavily in terms of the electronic infrastructure, which is robust, to be able to sustain that. This will be done in line with what government is doing. We have just passed, from Telecom's point of view, a broadband policy, which will ensure that the country has got broadband, the fiber optic that will run across the country, which will then assist us in terms of ensure that the electronic infrastructure of the post office, I mean, and the post bank is robust and able to avoid things of saying that the system is down all the time when people go there. We are mindful of the fact that some people, when they go to the bank, they have to borrow the money sometimes. They travel long distances, 50 kilometers and above. You go there, you have money. You're stranded. So we're mindful of things like that. But over and above that, there will be a need from in terms of the quality assurance issue to say, if you go to a bank, for example, now in the post office, you are not allowed to spend about 7 minutes. Eh? So the most you can spend in a line, in a queue, in the post office is 7 minutes. That's the right of everybody that you have given in terms of your cards. If you can't be assisted within 7 minutes, you can lodge a complaint with the ICASA. With regards to some of the things. So we will then develop the regulations, take into account those things with a view to say how best can we assist the post office to be able to avoid long queues, not having money in the bank and so on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Norman. And then I think, Alf, if you can deal with the effectiveness of government, the role of ministers, please.
Thank you. Just to talk to the issue of the state bank and the possible bailouts and how do we prevent risks like that, because certainly that affects all of us as members of the public as well. I think my colleague already alluded to the fact that the current scenario without this bill is actually the real risky scenario, because that situation occurred at some point where money was, because the post bank is within the post office, the post office had access to money within the post bank and took some of that money at some point, and then government had to do that bailout. So right now is the risky situation. It was at that point that Treasury also had to intervene and ring fence the money is subsequently provided again to secure deposit the funds. So I think we're moving into a much better scenario now through this bill. If you take the kind of provisions that are contained in the bill, mainly one of the main purposes of this bill was to create relevant corporate governance structure, which otherwise were non-existent because it operated within a bigger organization. It didn't have its own board as the Post Bank. It didn't have its own mechanisms to run appropriately. So included in the bill, you'll then find, for example, the power of the minister to make regulations on the effective implementation of the act and the functioning of the organization. You have the intervention clause, which is designed in such a way to ensure that if there's the slightest hint that things are going wrong, the minister can't interfere, but the minister can intervene. And it's set circumstances, not just because for the sake of intervention, but if there are serious problems there, she has the right in certain circumstances to intervene. So those are typical mechanisms that will help prevent problems occurring and ultimately any form of bailout. I'd say that the last two issues that are critical is the policy power. Bearing in mind that a contravention of this policy would make whatever act the Post Bank performed null and void. So the Post Bank must perform its functions, its banking activities in accordance with the policy made by the minister. Now, importantly, we've already spoken to the three critical policies that the minister is empowered to make, being those policies mentioned in Clause 9.1. Which is the borrowing, the lending, and the investment policies. Everything really in banking, as we know, in one way or another, relates to those three main functions. So if you, through policy, can control that, you can control effectively how the bank operates. Now, if you then deal with those policies, those are not just policies which we quickly make and publish and it may be disastrous. Those are policies that would require proper consultation and a thorough process. So you'll find those processes in Clause 26.3, where any policy must go through public consultation. But in addition to that, the bill currently specifically says the Minister of Finance must agree with the policy that the Minister of Communications makes. So already there you have the strength of National Treasury coming in to make sure that the policy is a well-drafted and sound policy. Secondly, Cabinet must approve it. Thirdly, it must be tabled in Parliament and then finally gazetted. So I think if you look at the processes around those policies, one hopes to and one believes that a good and sound policy will emanate from that. What's more is Clause 26.2 provides that our minister is obliged to make those policies within 6 months after the commencement of this act. So we can't just leave it. It's not one of those things we can just ignore. You have to make it. And once you've made it, the Post Bank must act in accordance with it. So in those, and we believe those provide then the necessary governance structures to ensure sound running of the bank and would ultimately prevent any form of bailout. Lastly, as also mentioned before, remember in the current environment we have an exemption from the Banks Act. The Post Office doesn't have to comply with all the financial requirements, so it's in a sense unregulated. While this bill now brings the Post Bank within the fray of the whole financial sector and financial regulation. So now suddenly the bank, the register of banks must, for example, approve of the appointment of the board members to ensure that they're fit and proper. That's the first important thing. Secondly, the bank must apply and meet all requirements under the Banks Act in order to become a bank. Now, that means all the checks and balances will be put in place to make sure that this bank does not behave irresponsibly, because the moment it does that, it affects the whole financial system. So, in essence, the registrar of banks now will play a prominent role, and it will be regulated like any other bank, and therefore it won't be an exempted form of bank that can do as it likes. The necessary financial regulations and laws are in place to ensure that banks operate in a way that's in the best interest of the financial sector. Thank you.
Thank you. I think there was also a question, Chairperson, honourable members, on the role of the PCC in the appointment of the board, I think, which was raised. So to say that the PCC must not necessarily, or Parliament, must not necessarily come when there are challenges. I think, you know, I just want to assure the Parliament, I think, from what my colleagues have said, what Alfred just said just now, in regard to the checks and balances that we put in place to ensure that the things are run smoothly in the bank in terms of what we are envisaging. But to talk a bit on the process of appointment of the board, as it were, because we believe that this bank is a state bank, we believe that the public needs to have a role to play in regard to the nomination of the people. And it's not only about the minister who will decide on those things. The person will decide that a notice is sent in two national newspapers and the Gazette for people to nominate people. Once that has happened, the minister will establish a nomination committee, which will then consider all those nominations and make recommendations for Mr. Society. So what I'm trying to say is that it's not necessarily the minister only who make that decision, but he is going to be an independent committee which is going to be looking at those names and making recommendations. The committee will be made of people from various spectrum within the country, and also to hear the board has got representativity in terms of gender, race, and all other things that needs to be done in line with the constitution of the republic. I just wanted to indicate that, Honourable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope that we've covered all the questions. Sorry. Or is there still the composition of the board? I think. Yes. Sorry, John.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 12 deals with the composition of the board. I think the question related to are they full-time or part-time, and exactly how is the board constituted. The board consists of 9 non-executive members and then 1 executive. That executive is the managing director. So the executive director, by nature of that appointment, is a full-time person running the bank. Then you have the 9 non-executives. By virtue of that function, they're not full-time. They're there on a non-executive basis, and therefore not full-time. And those 9 consist of 7 and 2. The 7 are appointed following a public nomination process where a nomination committee plays a role and then makes the recommendations to the minister. And the other 2 are existing board members of the post office that are nominated by the post office and then also serve on the board of the post bank. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Jacobs.
Thanks, Chair. My apologies for coming late. Seems as if I've missed a lot because I have an interest here.
But I did apologize.
Yes. I think it's about 2 weeks back I was complaining about state-owned bank in one of our meetings. Fortunately, it seems as if this post bank is going to be that state bank. But I got a little bit concerned in its operation, because is it going to still to operate like a commercial bank? Because it's focused, I think the interest of this bank, its target should be people from the disadvantaged areas. And there are many risks involved here. for instance, just like as the gentleman raised issues of collaterals, and some people will go to this bank to make loans and then to start business and so on. Within no time, the business has collapsed, and how are you going to address that? These are some of the issues that I'm being concerned. That is, how is it this bank going to assist our people? Because I think the intention it is to assist our people. And I wish that it should not operate like any other bank. And if it operates like any other bank, other banks are just after profit. I don't know this one, how is it going to operate, but I'm still going to read this draft bill, because I'm very much interested in that. And the other issue, it's going to operate from the post office, as I'm listening. But now, I think if it becomes successful, I think there won't be enough space for it to operate from the post offices, because post offices, they've got other functions that they have to do. So it means we are now going to mix money issues as well as issues that fall under the post office. But maybe can I get that clarity? Its operations. I'm very much interested in that, because if it's a state bank, it should address the needs of the lower income people who come from the disadvantaged areas.
Yes, I think it's a very, very good question. It's, you know, the issue is whether this will just be another commercial bank. We also have history in our country, you know, with many developmental funds, like the Cooler Fund, you know, for small businesses. And because, you know, there is working with public funds, these, you know, institutions then become just, you know, more commercial institutions, and they want fancy business plans, and in the end, people don't go out to the people who need it. Now, this bank is supposed to be a state bank that will service the needs of the poorest section of our community. So, of course, we've built into the bill elements that will ensure that we will not be just another commercial bank, but in terms of policies that will develop, we will ensure that we have the most appropriate mechanisms in place to deal with borrowing, with lending, with investment. So those things will have to be sorted out to ensure that this bank is a bank of the poor. Norman, I don't know whether you want to add something there.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Member, for that question. I think the acting DG has touched or tried to respond to the question around the issue about lending the loans, as it were. So I'm not going to dwell much into that. But just to emphasize on the point that the government would then need to develop a lending policy, which would then clearly spell out what are those conditions and circumstances within which the bank can loan people money, as it were. You know, the loaning business, loaning people money is a risky business. Perhaps you need to build some mechanism to manage that. But we also recognize that there are other initiatives within government which are aimed at providing the necessary financial support to that market. You've got the MAFISA issues, you've got the FX fund, you've got FEDA, some of the things that from the DTI side and so on. So we take note of those kind of things. So we should, going forward, be able to look at how best can this bank be able to tap into that kind of facility that exists within government to support such people. So the lending needs to be looked at within the broader government context in terms of the other intervention that government has got. I think I'll ask my colleague Willie to, there was a talk about the bank and its operations, what would then happen? Because there's a, you know, look at the postal infrastructure will be, you know, not be sufficient with time in regard to the volume which may come, you know, the people that need to go there. So maybe my colleague can talk to the I think we spoke about the phases of the bank, the third phase, what we're envisaging to, with regard to this bank, you know, in the near future as it comes. Will it?
Thanks so much. I hope the question came in answered. Mm-hmm. I'll respond to the question. One, I think, as I said, when this government came into being in 1994, already in 1996, there was a talk to make sure that we establish a policy to govern and to move process of how this post banking, this vision was there already. How we want to see this vision move forward. In 1998, the white paper and policy was established. In the same year, the Act was promulgated, the Postal Services Act, which then regulated the post bank operations. Now, in the policy outlined three stages to say we want to create a bank, but one, this bank should start as a depository bank, a profit center. Secondly, this bank must be a subsidiary of the post office, trying to incubate it and have infrastructure before it can go and become independent. The last stage, this bank will compete pound to pound with any other commercial bank in the country. Now, stage one, we are aware of the fact that most of us who used to have the books that we go to save money in the post office, you are due to us to save every day, you know, that 10 rand. Now, we are in stage two and three in this legislation. The policy does allow that one day government might want to compress stage two and three into one. We are doing that. In 2005, when the two ministers met, Minister of Communications, the late Minister Kasabori, and Minister of Finance, Honorable Trevor Manuel, they signed a memorandum of understanding to say, let's agree. This is a banking issue, but it's within your terrain as Minister of Communications. It was about post bank. Let's agree in terms of moving forward. And that has been agreed. Since then, we've been engaging as officials in the working committee that was allowed by NDDG from all spectrums of institutions. Now, this bank currently is going to be one, a subsidiary in terms of clause 4 of the post office. Secondly, stage 3 of the policy says this bank must have an independent board. So you see stage 2 and 3 are compressed. For this now to become effective and efficient enough, let it become identified itself gradually outside post office operations with its own board, with its own executive, and its own staff. Because, as I said, the banking sector is a highly regulated sector. There are a lot of requirements involved. Somebody behind the counter selling stamps might not be able to assist me on financial matters. Hence, we said when it started on operations, it's going to use post office infrastructure. There'll be dedicated counter only for post bank, nothing else. Because that person is trained to handle funds. He's not trained to sell stamps or post letters. Because this person has gone through physical requirements and declared fit and proper by the Banking Act. So that's a requirement. In all post office outlets, 2,600 nationals will have a counter dedicated for post bank officials. Secondly, because this bank is gradually moving out, they will build their own infrastructure moving forward. They might identify spots of a business case that we want to start moving and have our own corporate image that this bank will do in the operation, that the post has allowed to do that. I'm not sure if I've covered the whole question, Digi.
No, thank you. I think you did. You did. Sorry, I put you in a difficult position right here, but I always knew that he will rise and respond to that question. But I just want to also add to what Mr. Keller said, that when we talk about a stand-alone bank in the future, I think I just want to assure members that we are creating a state bank here, not a private company. And we will want it to remain as such, as is the intention of the policy to create a state bank. Just to allay the fears, I think there has been fears, I think, and some ambitions that at some point government may privatize this and make it a commercial bank. So our intention is to create a state bank, which in our view must remain a state bank for many years to come, to be able to service that particular market, of this market segment. This is a trend, I think the acting DG spoke about the trends in other parts of the world. In Germany, Deutsche Post, Deutsche Bank, is the biggest retail bank, and it's owned by the post office, owned by the state. So that's what we want to see going forward, not a bank which is owned by private hands. I just want to assure members that that is the intention going forward, and we want to see it that way. Thank you very much, Professor.
Chair, because my colleague have raised the question of benchmark, let me add to that, to say we've done the benchmarks globally. The indicators are showing that commercial banks are failing to compete with both banks in the global market. You have raised Germany, Sweden is one of them. The biggest bank in Sweden today is Postbank. Started like us. Japan, the Prime Minister, your politicians, you know, he was fired sometimes last year because he wanted to privatize Post Bank. He was fired. Because countries are saying we want to identify ourselves with our own national assets, which are own banks. So why can't we do that in this country? We've got a massive infrastructure. We've got population which cannot bank today in the commercial banks. They cannot be part of the current mainstream. So it's a duty of government and the executive to make sure that we create a mechanism. So we've done due diligence study, the report is there, that indicates the market is there. People are willing to bank. People are playing stock fails. But because I don't have requirement, I don't have ID, I don't have certain advice, I cannot go to commercial bank and open an account. I end up taking my money, put under my trust, it gets lost. So this is a bank that was or a bank. That's a risk, because today commercial banks have got stringent requirements that before you can open an account, you got a lot of interviews. So as government was saying, this initiative that in 1998 was mooted in the policy, thanks Chair, I wanted to add to my colleague's submission.
I'm very happy to hear what I'm hearing here, because I want to still have a certain old woman who was very, very disappointed, because when her husband died, she took 50,000, wrapped it, because she didn't have the requirements at the bank. She wrapped it in a plastic and tied it and put it between the roof. It's a first roof and the wall. And after the following year, there was a need to take children to school. When he tried to get the money to assist her children, it was powder. Mice has worked on that money. She was very, very, very mixed up. So I'm happy to hear that this bank is going to cater for people who cannot have access to this bank. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
you see, my I wanted to comment with something to make it straight at this, that the issue raised that some of the banks, there have a lot of strings attached. I'm subject for correction. I think that one is due to the fact of the security, state security, in fact, because sometimes there were a lot of allegations that some people are opening bank books with an aim of using it for their own purpose, like these big syndicates. They open a bogus bank book and then they deal about the checks and put them in withdrawal. And how are you going to secure that? Because you're saying in your case, you want to make it easier for the people to open just a bank book without state security. That's my concern.
I think very important issue raised, and but that is why the bill is very clear on this matter. And that is that when we get into the borrowing, lending, and investment side of things, the minister, in concurrence with the finance minister, must develop policies. Now, as you've heard internationally, there are success stories. So we still have to go and sit down and develop policy around these matters, dealing with the South African issues. Like, for example, the example that you've raised. How do we counter such a situation? So in developing the policies within 6 months after the bill has been approved, those issues will have to be dealt with. In the same with investment. You know, we will have to have a policy on investment. We can't allow this bank to just go and invest, you know, somewhere in Greece where there are economic problems and, you know, the banks fall flat there and impact on our investments here and our poor people lose money. So we will have to have a clear policy and guidelines as to under what conditions this bank can invest, under what conditions the bank can borrow money or can lend money. So those are the kind of issues that we will have to deal with. Norman?
Well, thank you. I want to add also on the question of the of security in regard to people with bank accounts and so on and so on. I think my colleagues, when they presented the process, they indicate that the establishment for the bank to get a license, it will have to go through a process. That process is with the Register of Banks, which will then test its network, its infrastructure, and other things that need to be done. And one of the things that cannot be exempted in that process is the issue of security. Which is one of the stringent requirements which is required in that regard. So, as it were, you know, it will be required that the bank have got security measures, which then prevents the things that the honourable member have raised. I wonder if my colleagues want to add something in regard to that issue. But the bank will be subjected to all the rules that needs to be done in terms of whether the banks and the funds are secured. In that environment. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I've flagged the slide there on the board that HDD presented. The previous slide that we said the role of BOC was develop legislation. That's the policy making department. We've done that. It's in front of you. Now the second bullet says National Treasurer, which is the Minister of Finance, which all is complete. Remember, all banks are under his arm.
Yeah.
Now, with the Reserve Bank, are working on prudential requirements. The issue that honourable member is raising. This is not our terrain. We are not experts. Our role is to provide a legislation. As soon as it gets passed, the number of role players involved. Minister of Finance will say, now Post Bank, I think you are ready to go and receive your license. Because that applying, I've tested all the requirements that need to be met in terms of the Banks Act. Because the Banks Act regulates all other banks. In fact, we're being unfair to this bank. Because I said to this bank, go and register to the Banks Act, but you're not a commercial bank. Government is being unfair. Because the Bank Act has got these huge requirements. You must have so much reserved. Our initial argument that we raised to Minister and Cabinet, we said, Cabinet, just deem this bank as being licensed. We did that. The bill went to Cabinet. Minister of Finance says, no, I can't pass this bill. I want this bank to be tested like any other bank to understand what member is raising. And we said, no, thanks, we are happy if this bank needs to be tested to do that. So, of course, we agree. Currently, as we're speaking, the meetings are going on, the Reserve Bank, the Registrar, the Post Office, Ministry of Finance, to make that bank, as soon as the law gets passed, is ready with all the infrastructure ready to do that. So it's just to raise and support what my colleague said. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let's have the last one.
Thank you, Chair. My question is in some way answered, but not totally. And Norman touched on it, and you as well now at this stage. And that is the establishment of the bank at the end of the day. And therefore, the security and everything is going with it. And I asked, my question was, especially in the rural areas where we haven't got infrastructure, in more non-rural areas, we can use maybe the post office and that facilities. But in the rural areas, there's nothing. And we must have something there who secure the money and everything when we take the money to the people. And how are we going to do that? Thank you.
Okay. No, I will try to respond to the question. I think it will also require that as the bank continues to do its business, really we think beyond outside the box, you know, in a way. We need to sharply reflect on that matter with some level of intelligence, you know, in that regard. So I think our view is that the because the post office all over the country, in some parts of the country, even if there is no e-communicativity, there is a post office in there somewhat. I think, in a way, if there is no infrastructure, for example, if there is no telecommunication infrastructure to enable e-services, the bank should be able to create some means in terms of how people in those areas are able to access banking services, even if it means that, for example, in those years, we will know that even if in a clinic there is no doctor, but you know very well in advance that in 2 months' time there will be a doctor coming to see patients in the village. Mm-hmm. It could be that they may think about something like that in the future. I'm just trying to think aloud on some of the things, but you know, then I think the bank needs to think outside the box to be able to cater for this market. It could be that, you know, once in a week, there's a mobile, you know, people that go there, with money, people go there and get their money from the bank. And all the things need to be communicated, some of those kind of things, you know, I mean, to avoid a situation whereby people travel many kilometers to go to a bank and find that there's nothing. So I think we'll look at some of those things in terms of how we should move forward. I hope I've tried to respond to the question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. As I said when we started, that this is the first engagement on this bill. And we're still going to take the bill. Look at, you know, what is definitely inside the bill. And we will meet with you again when we come back. I think the the first week, but we will inform you when we're going to meet, and then we'll do all the processes of this bill. But we would like to thank you very much for coming to share with us this very important information with this little piece of legislation that is going to change the lives of the people, especially in the rural areas. We would like to thank you for now, and you can go well. I know you were supposed to go yesterday, and we still appreciate that you didn't go. You had to postpone your flight. Thank you once again. You can, your meeting is adjourned. But can members remain?
Good. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members, as well, for your input. You've given us some good input to apply our minds and make sure that this will benefit. But I think the Honorable Chairperson will also know my sorry for taking the floor. My own passion, and that is e-skills. No one talked about e-services, and our people in rural areas don't have the skills, and we need to upskill our people, our communities as well, to be able to, in the end, what Norman has mentioned, you know, broadband and all these new technologies that we have out there that we need to use in order to benefit our people wherever they are. So there is a broader picture to this as well, and this is what we're dealing with also. So thank you once again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable members, we've got in front of us the program for the fourth term. Can we, whilst they are going out, we need to consider this. Thank you very much. The program for the fourth term, did you distribute? Yeah.
Okay. The bomb. Ivan, Shabbat. Yes, to this one. Oh, old people. I'm just going on. The meeting ended about 50 minutes ago.